The University Tower chimes, ringing another session of Ask the Professor, the show on which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. To my right, preparing to bowl, it's Professor Heather Hill-Vasquez.
Yeah, my husband's law firm is attending a charity bowling function tonight, so that'll be fun.
Where is it going to be?
It's over by Virginia Tile. What's it called? I can't remember the name.
Can you tell us what role you'll be playing?
I'll be bowling.
Oh, okay, good.
The role of the bowl.
The role of the bowl. But, you know, I'm doing okay.
Good.
Our power was out for 6 days, 7 hours.
Oh, no.
Unbelievable.
Six days and seven hours. We counted it. Yep. So,
did you go to a hotel?
It's a long, long story, but
we have time.
Some of us, no.
It was only a half-hour show.
During that time, we were not always in residence at the house.
Gotcha.
So I apologize that I can't remember the name of the bowling lane. At Thunderbird Lane, but that's closed now.
Yeah, Thunderbird is closed.
Mm-hmm. But anyway,
that's cool.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Not sure how many of our listeners know the classic Detroit trivia that Detroit has more professional and regular bowling alleys than any metropolitan area in the United States.
And wasn't Thunderbird the place where Bobby Allison was bowling for dollars? Was that the one?
Was that the
one? Really?
Oh, my gosh.
I think
so.
Whatever happened to that?
Is that in Berkeley?
No.
No, Thunderbird is up at 15 and...
Warren? Oh, I know. No, not Warren. I know where it is. It's
okay.
Between, like, Maine and...
Like Crooks. Off of Livernois and 15, wasn't it?
Yes.
That sounds right.
That's what I just said.
And then Bolarama. Okay. Where's Bolarama?
That's 7 in Berg.
Isn't there a bowling alley next to Ray's Ice Cream?
Bolero.
That's Bolero.
Yes.
That's where you're going?
No.
Oh.
I was just thinking about
it. I love that sign.
I was going to say, don't forget to go over and get some ice cream while you're there.
That sign is very kishy.
It
is.
The richness of Detroit's bowling tradition.
Yes.
And a wonderful name.
You know, Professor Dave Chow, a couple of years ago, a handful of comedians centered around, I want to say, Chris Hardwick, tried to revive Bowling for Dollars. I don't know if you ever saw the new version of it.
Yes,
it was fairly entertaining.
Yeah, and didn't they also have like celebrities doing it?
Yeah,
too?
They
yeah,
did. Yeah,
I remember
absolutely.
That, so I was...
Did not catch on the second time.
Unfortunately.
Around. Yeah, unfortunately.
Oh, well.
So you survived break?
No, not really.
Oh, okay.
I pulled 3 all-nighters during break. I worked like a fiend during break.
That's awesome.
Thank goodness we had power.
Yeah, good.
You guys had power, right?
We were very lucky. We all were very lucky.
Yeah, we were. I think we all had that nice, quiet little enclave where we had our own generator and something.
Something like that in our post-apocalyptic,
That sort of
windy
gives you
world.
An instant enclave, doesn't it?
Yes. Well, no, I needed it to send jobs out. That's also. I'm thankful. Internet's always good.
Exactly.
Look at how dedicated I am to this show. My parents are calling me, and I'm not picking up.
That's very nice that you're not picking up. And another kind of dedication, Professor Joe Abbasett is here, and he's going to be giving us updates on, I'm assuming you're watching the state game, or is that not for a while?
Oh, that's tonight.
Yeah,
okay.
That's tonight.
Okay.
So we have a break between the Michigan and Michigan State game, so we could actually do this show.
Give us the latest on whatever game is going on right now.
I just put on a random game, but... The phone companies have addicted us with these apps.
That's quite true.
You know, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have cared. But
mm-hmm.
Now that it's available.
Were you able to catch the glitch at the end of the Northwestern game yesterday?
No, but I heard about it this
pretty
morning.
Weird, kid. Pretty weird.
It was a pretty pedestrian day overall, but I guess that was the one thing that sort of stood out. I did watch the Wisconsin game, actually. Mm-hmm. Wisconsin is my alma mater.
Oh, okay.
So
sure.
I did watch that one, but that was it.
I had a theory when I was in graduate school myself about would I live to see the day when a 16 beats a 1. I think that every year that goes by that it doesn't happen, it actually makes it more likely. So this could be interesting.
So in the women's bracket, there has been a 16 seed that's beat a 1 seed. But actually, the probability of the 1 seeds having won this many games is actually higher now than the probability of a 16 seed
interesting.
Having... beat a 1 seed. It should have happened by now.
Sure.
Sometimes you watch these 16 versus 1 seeds and you wonder if it's ever going to happen.
Yeah.
Because most of the time these games are not competitive at all.
Yeah, absolutely true. Absolutely.
Or like my dad would say, it was like thunder and lightning taking on tofu. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I always love that analogy.
That is a great analogy.
The first half of the Villanova game that was pretty well balanced. It's just they broke bad in the second half.
Yeah.
Professor Jim Tubbs.
Hello.
Who are you picking to go all the way?
Oh, who knows? How about I have learned not to
Virginia.
Predict.
Virginia.
Oh, I'd love to see Virginia go all the way, but I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Well, that's all right. As long as it's entertaining. If we don't have a couple of big seeds fall by the end of the first weekend, it's not really a good tournament.
True.
That's my view.
Yeah, it does.
A couple years ago, I want to say 2012, 2013, we had all four, you know, number ones make the final four, and I'm like, I'm not watching the rest of this. Not fun enough. Someone else who's talking brackets a few moments ago, Professor Dan Maggio.
Only because I have money invested in a pool that I hope to.
Who did you pick to take it all?
No, it's not. It's one of those pick a square.
Okay.
I thought you were doing the bracketology.
Makes it fun.
$40 in.
Whoa.
It's $100. Wow. $2,000.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So
you're a high roller.
I want to see curling for dollars.
Oh, of course.
Let's just
that'd
be cool. Drop you the bowling.
I just want to see Monopoly bowling. Played with the old classic pieces again. That's all.
Well, they only got rid of one.
Oh, no, they got rid of three more today.
I thought they only got rid of one.
What were the three they got rid of?
Was it the thimble?
Not the thimble.
The shoe, and the wheelbarrow are gone.
No, that's fine.
My favorite.
They're not going to get rid of the car or the cat.
No.
Even though it's a 1930s
I think you mean the Scotty dog.
The Scotty dog.
Oh, close enough.
Yeah.
So what did they replace them with?
One is a dinosaor, and I can't remember the two others.
They put a dinosaur in
there?
There's
a dinosaur in there now.
No. Okay.
Yes.
Weird.
Interesting.
I'm not going to pick that.
So anyway, they got voted out internationally.
Oh, my gosh.
Mm. So,
with a dinosaur?
I can't believe they got rid of the shoe.
Yeah, the shoe's gone.
And the wheelbarrow. That's where you carry all your money in, like Scrooge McDuck.
No, and actually, as a little kid playing the game, I always went for the smallest... You know, a little Monopoly piece, so you couldn't see my little token on the board in case I land on your boardwalk. I can kind of like
you would hide it.
And hide it in the tuck it under the hotel, do whatever I have to.
Yeah, the thimble was not good for that.
No, it's too obvious. And the car is too big.
Yep.
I always put the thimble on the Scotty dog as a little hat. That's what it is. Folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. And if you don't stump the panel, you win one of our prizes. You can send us the questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. You can reach us on the web at udmercy.edu/atp, the all-new Detroit Mercy website. Or you can find us on the Facebook. And we have some questions from Michelle Horner of Las Vegas, Nevada. She sent us a nice set of questions, and we had just done the first one. Which state is nicknamed the Equality State? We had hit it right on that the answer was Wyoming. They were the first state to allow women to vote. So that's how they got that nickname. Also, most likely to resemble a square state. Although that could be them or Colorado, I suppose.
Yeah.
All right, we'll take it.
Pennsylvania.
Who is the... Yeah, Pennsylvania's kind of rectangular, isn't it?
Sure.
Yeah, but Wyoming is squarer with that corner. You cut off. Well, one corner is water, and then the other corner is cut off.
That is true. Okay. Who was the first actor to be nominated for Academy Award and Emmy Award in the same year, 2 years in a row, 1960, 1961? I'm going to need some help remembering what the movies are. I'm pretty sure I know what the Emmy was for.
1961.
Academy Award and Emmy, both years.
Henry Fonda?
No, it's not Henry Fonda.
Great guess.
I'm not sure that this person is like a super duper high caliber actor either. This is kind of
Burl Ives.
Wilford Brimley.
No. Wilfred Brimley.
So he would have been on TV and he would have been in the
And in the movies, 60 and 61.
Mm-hmm. Sid Caesar?
Jack Lemmon?
The
Walter Matthau.
Initials here are PF.
Ooh.
Peter.
Phil.
Peter Fonda. He was too
It's
young
a dude, then. Right?
Think, yes, it is.
Okay.
Dude. Think rumpled trench coat.
Peter
Falk, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
For what?
So for Columbo, and what was the.
I mean, what movie?
That's what I'm trying to think of. What movie would it have been?
Murder by Death?
The Great Race?
Oh, does he not list the movies?
No, there's no details.
Cool.
I'm sorry.
I'm dying to know.
You need to do the research. You need to do the research. I mean, you guys are with me. I'm actually proud of myself for hitting the caliber of the actor spot on as Jim sort of contorts his face. Peter Falk. Well,
Raymond Burr was going to be my guest before you gave us the initials.
Oh, come on. Columbo was great.
Columbo was good, but I can't imagine what movie.
Crazy.
Not just one movie, two movies.
Two movies. And, yeah.
In consecutive 61 and 60.
Movie two. And Emmy in 2 years running.
Yep.
Wow.
I think he was in The Great Race. That one,
right.
Tony Curtis.
He was also in Mad World, but I wouldn't exactly call that Oscar caliber.
It was
Oscar
caliber.
Well, they might have been desperate that year.
But what is
and when
it,
Lassie wins an award.
Was it for, right. I'm sorry, I missed this. Is it for supporting?
No, it role? Just says who was the first actor to be nominated.
Oh.
Yeah, that's all.
It might have been for helping write the script
yeah,
or something.
Or you yeah. was a gaffer, oh, being the sound effects. Or,
there you
yeah.
go.
Could have been
costume
editor.
Because of the trench coat, you know. Well, Dan does the research. Let's try this.
It was a caterer. Oh.
Did you find it?
He actually won an Academy Award in 61. Did you say nominated or win? Or
nominated is what it says here.
It says, oh, he was nominated, sorry, for Best Supporting Actor in 61 for Pocket Full of Miracles.
Ooh.
Okay. Okay. Sure.
Know. What about 60? And Murder, Inc.?
Huh. Okay. Streams I remember Pocket Full of Miracles.
And the Emmy was for Columbo?
It's got to be.
Because Glenn Ford and Betty Davis.
It doesn't list the Emmys. I'm sorry.
Oh, well. All right. Thank you, Google.
On the TV show Lost in Space, the original TV show, in what year did the Robinson family depart Earth?
Oh, it was in the 90s. It was 1990s because it was like 30 years into the future. What, 94? 98?
Very close. Very close. 1997 is what it says.
I'll give it to you.
If Kendra was here, she would have nailed it. That's all.
Yeah, she absolutely would have. If you had given her two outer parameters, she would have aimed right for the middle. During the years 1976 to 1980... Who was tasked to host the very last episode every season of Saturday Night Live?
Steve Martin?
Yeah, I was going to say
yeah.
Steve Martin. Steve Martin's a great guest, but that's not it.
Alec Baldwin?
You would have probably, he had been on so frequently, you would have called him a member of the cast during those years, I think.
Oh, Chevy Chase? His name, I can see
Murray,
his face.
Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd. Oh, was it?
Come on, Jim, describe this perp.
Is he African-American?
Nope.
No, he looked kind of disheveled.
Yep.
Woody Allen?
No. He was a rather acerbic comic.
Yes, he was.
Very Wally Cox.
Very.
But he looked a little like
Did
Wally
he have
Cox.
Glasses?
Yes.
Little
and
round glasses.
Bushy hair.
Yeah. Wally?
Nope.
No.
Wally
was,
Cox?
There's a B in there somewhere.
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry.
Buck Henry.
Buck
yeah.
Henry. That's who it was. So yeah, Buck Henry.
Okay, gotcha. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Hey, didn't he get like clipped in the forehead by Belushi's samurai sword one year?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
He did.
Who was the last American League manager to win a game by forfeit? When did it happen?
Wow.
It's a wonderful piece of trivia.
Do people... Are there actually forfeits in baseball?
No, there are, yeah.
When did it happen?
The only one I can think of
because
is...
Because you don't show up with enough players?
No, it was... The disco demolition thing in Chicago.
That's exactly the correct answer.
Do you guys remember that? Where they blew
up
they center field?
All the disco records.
Yeah, all the disco
outfield.
Records. I think. Who was the man? Was it Ralph Houk?
No.
Who are the teams?
July 12th, 1979. So it had to be.
Sparky Anderson.
Yeah. So for the record, because Chicago, you know, by the rules, wasn't a good host, and the play after the breakdown was basic. The field after
field
the breakdown was completely
terrible,
destroyed.
Yeah.
That. They had to hand over the win to the Tigers without playing the game.
But what year was it?
1979. Okay. 12 of July, 1979. Tigers, White Sox.
Sparky was the manager? That
so I think Sparky gets hired in 79 in the
I
middle
think that
of the season.
Was, yeah, I think it was somewhere like that. Yeah. Yes,
okay, because I thought Ralph Houk was...
Mm-hmm.
So the Tigers got the win, but they didn't even play?
Because of
field conditions.
So does the away team
the
get
host
the win?
Away team gets the win, yeah, exactly.
Because it's the host
of
the
disco demolition night.
Yeah, it was a doubleheader. I remember, it was the second of the doubleheader, and people stormed the field afterwards, too, and there are pieces of the 45 records all over the place.
Yep. You know, if you add in...
Attention to disco records.
If you add in the malice at the palace, I think Detroit sports teams have been involved in too many of these incidents. There's a whole scholarly PhD thesis locked away in there somewhere.
I mean,
you know?
Hey, at least... Yeah, for those of us who are into hockey, I mean, at least throwing octopi onto the ice, I mean, it's easier to clean up.
Oh, yeah.
It's true.
Have you guys seen the other ones in Canadian hockey where they throw the teddy bears on the ice?
For what?
They will, I think it's like for the first goal or something like that.
Oh, wow. No.
And they actually take the teddy bears and give them to charity, but it's gotten to a point of ridiculousness where they actually have to stop the game for a long stretch in order to pick them all up.
Pick them all up.
Yeah,
pick them all up. Because they kind of stick to the ice.
Well, no, they're actually having them put in plastic bags.
No, I mean, if it sits there for
too long,
the heat. Yeah. That's true. What was the name of the captain of the ill-fated Exxon Valdez?
I could...
Initials J, H.
John.
Jacob.
Jingleheimer. No.
Oh,
J.H.?
Mm-hmm. Same first name as my eldest son.
Joseph.
Joseph.
Or our panelist here.
For some reason, there is the first part of his last name. There is a crazy agglomeration of the hottest, hipsterist restaurants in Metro Detroit in this suburb right now.
Hazel Park?
Mm-hmm. So Joseph
Hazelwood?
Hazelwood is okay, what it Hazelwood. Says here, yes.
Joseph Hazelwood.
I'm sorry, I can't get over that. I keep opening up the Free Press and finding the hottest restaurants in all of southeastern Michigan in Hazel Park.
That's
like,
so crazy.
Just take me to Louis.
It's cheap. That's why. The property
yeah,
Louis
is good.
Okay. I think I've heard this before. It's getting a little bit out of hand, frankly. I remember when there was X number of Lego sets that you could collect and, you know, you knew you were a collector and now it's just so proliferated it's hard to keep up. But in Lego collector jargon, what is referred to as, and I quote, rocking horse poop?
Rocking horse poop?
We're a family show. What can I say?
Oh.
Don't think too hard. Think about it from a collector's angle.
Just little brown one by one pieces?
I mean, that's a reasonable thing, but it's more of a theory instead of a very specific thing.
Oh.
A theory?
It's like a
what, like the
a
little
construct.
Lego hair pieces?
Nope.
Construct.
Nope.
The little pieces with only one peg?
Nope. I think that's where Dan was heading. Oh. No, it refers to having a very, very rare piece that other people don't have. That's like a
nickname. Oh, okay, because
it.
There's no such thing as a rocking horse poo. Okay,
right.
Gotcha.
Something like that.
Like the foot of the astronaut.
Then I have to ask my good friend Peter.
Oh, have you guys... Okay. Dan, I was going to ask you.
Big collector.
Have you seen the latest thing that they got on Kickstarter now? The Lego tape?
Yeah, I saw that.
Lego tape.
Yeah.
It's flexible tape.
Oh,
that you can like curve on shapes and things like that.
Well, I like it already.
But that's not owned by Lego. But probably either soon it will be or it'll just disappear.
Yes. Mysteriously.
Mysteriously from the internet. Just like the electric car.
Speaking of disappearing, let's take a break. And we are back with some fantastic questions all the way from Las Vegas, Nevada, which people tell me is kind of a fun place to see the big basketball tournament from, by the way, since it's the gambling capital of the United States.
Oh, I mean, some of the sports books got to be hilarious. I mean, sit there, nice big plush couch watching all the games at once.
Yeah, it's pretty fun.
Free drinks and munchies. I mean, I could deal with that.
Which U.S. president had the code name from the Secret Service of Renegade?
Ronald Reagan.
No, no. Well, that makes sense because he got all the R's.
Mm. Renegade.
JFK.
A little more recent than that.
Bush the second.
Nope. Wasn't W.
The original Bush.
H.W. Bush.
Nope.
Clinton then.
Clinton.
Running out of options.
Yes. Ford, Carter, Johnson.
You guys don't know this one, huh?
Eisenhower.
I guess now that I think about it, it was Barack Obama.
Renegade?
Yeah. We haven't heard what the Secret Service nickname is for 45 yet. It's about this time that it's revealed. So I wonder what his call sign is going to be.
Voldemort. Heaven forbid.
What did you say?
Voldemort. He who shall not be named.
That was Dick Cheney.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Dick Cheney looks like a pussycat compared to this president.
I know.
Okay.
What was the first novel... By tradition, so I'm looking at the English professor here, supposedly written on a typewriter. The first novel written completely on a typewriter.
When was the typewriter invented?
That's more of
a... Typewriter would have been in the 1800s.
That's more of a history thing.
Okay. So,
yeah, but that doesn't mean I shouldn't, you know.
Was it like a...
Little
it's
Women.
For lack of a better description, it's essentially the classic American novel written by an American.
Classic.
Oh, Mark Twain or Huckleberry Finn?
It was Tom Sawyer is what it was.
Oh,
yes.
Tom
Sawyer. Although what's interesting is the manuscripts that they found, now this is my wife coming into play because she's a historian, is that the original title of Tom Sawyer was Life on the Mississippi, and so sometimes it gets sort of garbled in the game of telephone we call life. And what TV show did Gary Coleman do his last reprisal of the Different Strokes Arnold Drummond role?
Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Yeah, when the Drummonds were trying to buy the place.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You guys disturbed me.
And that
deeply,
was also the Jeffersons' last, too, wasn't it? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, the Jeffersons ended up buying it.
Oh, bought the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air's house.
Well, his uncle's
house. His uncle's house, yes.
Yeah. It's Uncle Phil's place.
So. Uncle Phil. That's what I was trying to
Uncle
remember
Phil.
What his name
passed
was.
Away. So on the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air show, they had the old show stars come on and pretend to buy
it.
Oh.
because they were all
leaving.
I never watched the show.
Yeah.
So that was supposed to have been the end of the series. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. I never saw the end of the series. Cool. So.
I just remember it was like, wait a minute. That's, you know, so
cute. Fun to watch.
According to the way these things are charted, although I think we're all going to have to wash our eyeballs when we hear this, which of the Disney princesses is supposedly the youngest?
Snow White.
Do you know how old she's supposed to be?
14.
14 years old.
How did you know that?
That's lascivious.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Because I taught that women's and gender studies
class. Oh, that's right.
I
knew that Heather would know.
Women, female.
Because who is the one? I kept on thinking Aladdin.
Heroines.
Jasmine.
Jasmine.
But no, Jasmine was far more mature than 14, I'm guessing.
Not that I'm carding my Disney princesses or anything like that, so I mean.
It was pretty late in the grand scheme of Motown Records that they won their first Grammy. Do you remember the tune that won it and who performed it?
The first Grammy Motown ever won?
Mm-hmm. It was actually pretty late in the whole Motown craze.
Jackson 5?
It was not Jackson 5. It was Temptations.
Okay.
Just not, an imagination?
Nope. But it's in that era. It's just about the time they kicked David Ruffin to the curb for the first, fourth, second, thousandth time.
What is
My Girl?
Wasn't My Girl. Wasn't My Girl.
Darn.
Heather's doing the hand motions.
And that doesn't help.
So they replaced David Ruffin with the gentleman. His first name is Dennis. I always want to say Dennis Hastert. It was not Dennis Hastert.
No, I hope not.
Not the politician. It was Temptations' Cloud Nine was the name of the song.
Okay. Doing that fine. That was their first Grammy?
The first Grammy for Motown. For all of
that's unbelievable.
Can you sing it is. A little of it? Can somebody sing a little
We're doing
bit?
Fine on Cloud Nine.
Thank you.
Yep, that was
not
a classic.
Not one of their best either as far
60s
as I'm concerned.
Anthem. Oh, no, absolutely not. It was not the best.
But, well, maybe Matt just didn't do justice to it.
I'm sure I did not.
Ah, he did. Yes, he did.
On a typical NFL team, which position is the least expensive to get the franchise player designation?
Long snapper?
You're in the wheelhouse.
Punter?
The punter and the kicker.
And kicker at $4.8 million.
Oh.
A lot of professors.
I did say
you
punter.
Can get.
Yes, you did. Yes, you did.
I said
absolutely.
Punter.
But how much? 4.8, correct. That is correct.
4.9. Oh, that's was in order to be franchised. What, you got to be in the top 10%?
I may or may not have run into somebody, a young person, in the last few years who said, I'm thinking about the possibility of going to school in such a way that I could be, yeah, the long snapper on an NFL team. It's the equivalent, essentially, of being the bullpen catcher. I mean, you get the World Series ring and everything. You make a nice salary. You get to travel, hang out with stars.
You don't get beat up, usually. You
know, usually, yeah.
Interesting.
And I've seen the bullpen catcher at Comerica Park, and I'm like, I really think with a little bit of gumption and elbow grease, I could do that job.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they say the same thing about organic chemistry. On what popular TV show would one find the character Eunice Wentworth?
Oh, Mama's Family.
Gilligan's Island.
Mama's Family.
It says here, that's Mrs. Howell's name. Yeah. Yeah, that's Gilligan's Island.
Wentworth.
Eunice Wentworth.
Oh.
Of course, Dave. That was
tricky. Also known as Lovey.
Yes.
Did they ever call her Eunice Lovey. On the show?
There was one episode where...
Of course you know this.
Yes, where they supposedly, the person that married the Howells was defrocked or something like that. So she insisted that Thurston call her by... You know, her maiden name.
I was always fascinated at where they got the huge wardrobe and the silver service and the china and everything.
They
took it along on their three-hour tour.
Darn right. They're always prepared.
Thurston and Eunice. Now, there's a couple right
there. The show requires some suspension of disbelief.
Uh-huh. Quite a bit. Yes, quite a bit.
Well, I want to know how come they didn't share their clothing with anybody else.
So how did they get married officially? Did the professor marry them?
No, captain.
Yeah. Oh, the captain.
Took him out to the lagoon.
Well, Ginger, of course, took quite a sterling wardrobe along with her.
Yeah, that's also true, yeah.
She always had an evening gown ready when necessary.
You just never know.
Dan, I can't help myself, but when you said the captain, I immediately thought of the, if you want to call it that, the scene from the Blair Witch Project where they're arguing about Gilligan's Island. The captain this, the captain that. The guy steps in between. It was the skipper, man. It was not the captain. It was the skipper.
So do you have to be in water Do they have to stand in water for the
that's
the captain?
What they say.
At sea?
At sea.
Yeah. Oh, is that the way it works?
So that's why they took it out to the lagoon. They built a little raft out there, and they performed the ceremony. And
oh, your recall is amazing.
I just absolutely
don't ask me how. I couldn't tell you what I had for breakfast.
I don't want to know.
How many times have you seen each episode?
Probably far too much.
There you go.
That's my babysitter when I was growing up.
I understand.
That was my babysitter. Last question from Michelle Horner. Name both of Mick Jagger's wives.
Jerry Hall.
Bianca.
Okay, so what happened to Bianca?
Thrown to the curb.
Essentially. Do you remember what year?
88.
You know, yeah. It was 1978 he divorced her. What about Jerry Hall? What year? What happened?
Probably the 90s.
It was? Yeah. It was 1999.
Wow.
What happened to her, though?
What happened to her?
She probably grew up.
No. Yeah. She ended up marrying... She ended up marrying somebody big time, like a Warren Buffett or somebody like that, didn't she?
Well, it says here that they didn't technically divorce. Technically, they got their wedding, their marriage annulled in 1999.
No, but didn't she marry somebody...
Was she the original...
No. You're going to say Spice Girls, aren't you?
No. Oh. I was going to say the original, not the original, Spider-Man. Was she in that?
Was she? Jerry Hall?
I thought she was a model.
Wow. You mean the Sam Raimi movie?
Yeah. I don't know.
Maybe she had a bit part. No, I think you're right.
She might have been arm candy for somebody.
The Joker.
That would be
the
Batman.
Green Goblin.
No, she was the...
I'm thinking about the one. No, you're Kim thinking Basinger. Batman.
Oh, that's definitely Batman.
Batman.
She married Rupert Murdoch, didn't she?
That's it.
Batman, not Spider-Man.
I didn't know that. Are they still married?
Yes.
It was I don't even want to think. I can't think about it.
That's jumping out of the frying pan into the fire.
Who would have thought a marriage with Mick Jagger wouldn't work?
Seriously,
that's a
Joe.
Rebound, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
A marriage made in heaven
Come on. Yeah.
Okay, what did you find out,
There's
Dan?
There's no other way to explain that except what we're all thinking.
What?
That's it.
What the?
That's, come on.
What, are you
come
thinking
on.
The Anna Nicole Smith School of Business?
Rupert Murdoch. Oh,
look what happened
God.
To her.
Well, no, I mean talking marrying rich and ancient. I mean...
Is there another question?
you know, we've completed Michelle's set of questions, so I'm just fascinated by all the research that Dan is doing right now. Of course, I also can't go by one episode without bringing up The Simpsons, where to give him credit to be able to make fun of himself, Rupert Murdoch was in an episode of The Simpsons. Every time he spoke, he said, "I'm Rupert Murdoch, the billionaire tyrant." They made him say that at the beginning of every line. And I was just sort of like, at least he has a sense of humor. That's all I have to say. Speaking of sense of humor.
And timing.
I hope that we've entertained you all, but it's time to say goodbye, Professor Maggio.
Goodbye.
Professor Tubbs.
Goodbye.
Professor Abbasid.
See you next week.
Professor Chow.
See ya.
Professor Hill Vasquez.
Bye-bye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu. Tweet to us on Twitter @AskTheProfessor or using the hashtag AskTheProfessorUDM. Or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is transcribed at the facilities of the Briggs Building in the Department of Communication Studies in the College of Liberal Arts and Education at the University of Detroit Mercy's McNichols campus. Ask the Professor is produced by Javon Holland, technically directed by Michael Jason, and our executive producer is Dr. Vivian Dix. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mile.